Blog Talk Radio.
How can that be? You know, was I off the air all this time? I can't believe that. Oh, I'm looking at my host here, and it seemed like I was off the air. I could not believe that. I was off the air. I just can't believe that. Did I have a... Oh, well, I don't know. I'm going to have to wait till after the show to find out what was going on, because... Somehow, it seemed like I was off the air. I don't understand what was going on, but I hope everybody heard my rant. I've been ranting for 20 minutes here, and it seemed like, well, you're probably going to have to go to the archive and find out what I said, but I don't want to repeat it because it was really off the cuff. But now that we're back here, I don't understand why I was off the air, because everything seemed to be going good, and I didn't see anything that I should have been off the air. Let me just bring it. There was a problem. You are not connected. Okay. I don't know whether I was off the air for the last 20 minutes or not, because I'm looking at the daggone host up here, and it says that my mic was out, so I don't know. But let me do a small recap. I was talking about Ted Nugent and what a wacko, nonsensical nut job he is. And I wanted to get back on track and talk about Man for All Season, Chuck Hagel, which I talked about. And then we were going to talk about the Senate Republicans stacking the Judiciary Committee, but I jumped off the track and started talking about Michelle Bachmann, who now was reinstated to the Intelligence Committee. Can you actually believe this woman is on the Intelligence Committee? I don't know what she does on the Intelligence Committee. Maybe she's the one who delivers coffee. No. They have to have somebody with a little more intelligence than that to deliver coffee. So maybe she just, I don't know why she's there. Because she's the dumbest, she's dumber than nuts. She's dumber than the nuts the squirrel buries in the ground. This woman is so dumb that it's an insult to call her dumb. But that's, you know, hey, what can I say? But getting back to the gun legislation. I mean, this King, what's his name? Representative King? He is one dumb guy. This other King. Well, we're going to talk. Let me back up here. Well, I'm going to talk about at the moment Representative King from New York, who said he wanted to know why people need to have guns. He says, I don't know. I really don't know why people need to have assault weapons. Not guns, assault weapons. Peter King, a longtime proponent of gun safety, said that Americans don't need assault weapons during an appearance on MSNBC's Morning Joe Thursday, which was last Thursday. The vocal New York Republican discussed his efforts to force House Speaker John Boehner to bring a Hurricane Sandy relief bill to vote, but not before agreeing with Joe Scarborough's agreement that lawmakers should move to limit the availability of assault weapons in the aftermath of the Newtown shooting. Scarborough said, I don't hear from the Republicans. Don't hear you conservatives say, hey, Congressman, you know, what I want is a handgun to protect my family. I want a shotgun. But do I really need an assault weapon? Am I, you know, charging the beach, Omaha Beach? And King said, I fully agree with you. I voted for the assault weapon ban in 1994. My father was a police officer. I really don't know why people need assault weapons. I'm not a hunter, but I understand people want to hunt. I understand people who live in rough neighborhoods and have small businesses want to maintain a pistol, protect themselves. He says, but an assault weapon? No, he never said that people with assault weapons are good Americans, but to give that potential to the mass murderers who would be able to outgun police, who, as we saw, could carry out the worst devastation, why the issue of an assault weapon should even be on the table, why we want to identify with that when it's a vocal minority, but it's a minority who support these weapons. And I wanted to get to something that was said. I saw on the Ed Schultz show the other day, and Ed Schultz had this woman on his show. Now, I am going to play this for you. It's about 8 minutes long. But, ladies and gentlemen, you need to hear what this woman says. This woman, Ed asked her, I understand you want to have a gun. I understand it. What are you going to do with the gun? Where are you going to put it when you go to school? How would you prevent these rambunctious kids from getting a hold of the gun? Hear what her answer is. Please listen. It's about 8 minutes long, but I need to play the whole thing so you can hear everything in context.
One of them is with us tonight. I am joined this evening by Carolyn Kane, a grade school teacher in Utah County, Utah, who teaches special education in kindergarten to the sixth grade. Carolyn, great to have you with us tonight. The Newtown shooting, did it have a profound effect on you to bring you to this conclusion?
Well, absolutely. Getting a concealed carry permit is something I thought about for quite a while, but when I was watching the news and listening to those teacher stories, I couldn't help but put myself in their shoes and wonder what would I do, and just start to think about what would I do in that situation, and I wanted options.
Why do you want to carry a gun in a classroom? Why do you want to be armed? Can you hear me? Or did the audio drop out? Carolyn, the audio is gone. We are having an audio problem here. and we hope to correct it. Carolyn Kane, a grade school teacher in Utah County, Utah. With the Ed Show, we have sorted out our audio problem now. I am rejoined by Carolyn Kane, a grade school teacher in Utah County, Utah, who teaches special education children in kindergarten to sixth grade. And she explained to us just a moment ago what impact the Newtown shooting had on her. But as we go back to you, Carolyn, I'd like to know, why do you want to carry a gun in the classroom?
Well, I think it's not so much I want to carry a gun. I want to have options for that situation. I think the world is changing. It's not as safe, and we see these kinds of situations happen over and over. And when I first heard, I thought, wow, I wish I could have a gun. And I did, because I didn't know I could. And after I heard about the training and the course, and I learned that I could, and I thought, you know what, this is something I want to learn about, and I want to be able to do if I have to.
And the state of Utah will allow you to get a conceal and carry this gun into the school. How are you going to carry it? How are you going to store it? And are you worried that it might be accessible to some rambunctious kids?
Those are actually still questions. I mean, like I said, I just found out. So I'm a researcher. I'm not going to run, grab the first holster and gun I see and go to class. I want to feel comfortable that I'm not putting my students at more danger by carrying a gun myself. But the more I'm learning, I think there are some safe options. And like I've said, you know,
what do you think parents think? What kind of parental reaction are you going to get?
Well, I'm a parent myself, and just putting myself in parent shoes and listening to the news report. Boy, I wish those teachers had a gun.
Well, what about the other parents? They may not see it the way you see it. Do you think that they would feel comfortable knowing that the teacher has got a firearm in the classroom?
I think the parents that know me know that I love their children and that I wouldn't put them at risk in any way.
So you don't think a firearm in the classroom would put anyone at risk, that it would be a much safer environment?
I absolutely wouldn't. I wouldn't consider carrying one if I didn't feel like I could do it safely.
But what if you had a parent who objected to it? What position would that put you in?
Well, in the state of Utah, a parent doesn't have to know about it. Teachers can carry a firearm, and nobody ever. They've been doing it for 12 years. I've found out more and more about teachers that do, and employees.
They've been carrying guns. The teachers have had guns in schools for 12 years in Utah.
Yes, it's been legal to do that for 12 years.
And parents haven't known about it.
Right. You don't have to tell if you're a concealed weapon.
Do you think parents have a right to know? For instance, if my child was in your classroom, do you think that I would have a right to know that there is a firearm in that classroom?
Well, if somebody, I personally would feel okay with any of the teachers I know, and any teacher that I've ever met,
about a parent. I want to focus.
Right.
I mean, the parents are dropping their little kids off to a school, and they don't know that there is a firearm in the classroom. Do you think they have a right to know?
Not necessarily.
Why?
No. Well, because I think that firearms are. What we do know is that the bad guys come into schools. What we don't know, I mean, we're making lots of guesses about what could happen if, and those things haven't happened. Just like I said, we've been able to carry them for 12 years here in Utah, and I have not heard them, and they would be on the news if those things happened. So I think it's the same reason I would prefer not to have big armed militia next to the door for the kids to see.
But it's a parental right issue here as well. I can't believe that every parent, in Utah or any state would say, yeah, I think it's okay to have a firearm in the classroom and me not know about it.
Okay, well, then you could say this. if they watch the news, if they, you know, are interested in the law, they know that it's possible that a teacher might be carrying a firearm. And so they would know that it's possible that could be happening at their school, and then that's a choice that they make.
Don't you worry about that you're going to be outgunned by someone with an assault weapon? I mean, what's to stop you from bringing an assault weapon in to protect?
You know what? Me bringing it in for protection?
Exactly. I mean, go ahead.
It's a concealed permit, so I have to conceal it. I'm not going to be able to conceal an assault weapon.
Do you think it would be a good thing if there was an assault weapons ban and criminals couldn't get them?
No. Well, because an assault weapons ban doesn't mean a criminals couldn't get them.
Okay. The polls show that only 27% of the people think that teachers should be armed. That's a rather low number. Do you get a sense from your community that that number doesn't mean anything, that people are going to go along with this?
In my community, yes. That is one of the reasons I don't think it should be a federal issue. That's why I think it should be up to local governments and state governments to decide.
And what about carrying a gun? What kind of message does that send to your students?
Well, it won't send any message because they won't know about it. In my classroom, I think it is of the most importance that my students feel safe when they're in there, because that's the only way they're going to learn. They can't learn when they're preoccupied with other things. And I would rather them not see big guns when they're walking into school.
Do you think your fifth and sixth graders will feel safer if they know you have a firearm? They could make that judgment.
I wouldn't give them the choice.
Okay.
I wouldn't feel. And in my community, I think they feel fairly safe anyway.
Okay. Carolyn Kane, I appreciate you joining us on The Ed Show tonight. Thank you for your opinions and your insight on this. Appreciate it.
I mean, can you believe that? Now, I don't know this woman. I don't know anybody that does. And I think that she looked very sincere on television, that she believed everything she said. But I am telling you, someone comes in with an AK-47, you think that woman is going to go out and confront that person? That is the most ridiculous thing. As a matter of fact, I have an old trailer in South Carolina that the squirrels and snakes and raccoons are living in right now. I will give it to you for $5. You can take it. In fact, I'll give it to you for nothing. This is completely idiotic. This is completely idiotic. You're going to take someone and train them on target shooting, and then they are going to confront someone that has an AK-47 that just shot these kids. As Vice President Biden said, these kids had multiple bullet wounds. Multiple. It wasn't one each. This fool had 6,300 rounds of ammunition that he bought. What are we talking about here? Okay, if you got a Glock, this woman is not going to go out and confront that person. I taught school. Don't tell me that you're going to conceal your weapon that you could get to when the daggone guy's coming down spraying the classrooms. That means you need to keep it in the classroom with you, in your pocketbook. And what are you going to do when these kids find it? Because they will find it. They will find it. No one needs to know. Well, gee whiz, do you think no one is listening to you say this stupidness over the air right now? Do you think these parents aren't telling their children, you look out for a gun in that classroom, and you tell me you don't think that's happening right now? What are these people? Are they living in a freaking dream world? In the Matrix or something? No one else heard what she said. And she said it so calm. She believes it. And I believe that she believes it. But it's like transference. These people have just locked into something that's completely out of unbelievable. It's like the Twilight Zone. I mean, do you know what it is to hold an M16 or AK-47 and shoot it? It was meant to kill human beings, not squirrels or deer. It's a .223. It was meant to shatter at 3,000 yards or more. This is just completely outrageous. They had the M14 just before I got in there, and the M14 used to rot. There was a Vietnam or whatnot, and then the bullet was so light at distance you had to compensate. But, you know, we ain't talking about shooting this bullet at 3,000 yards. We're talking about shooting it at 50 feet, 10 feet, point blank. You need it in your home, right? For the invasion that's coming in. Who the hell is coming in your house that's going to come in where you need 100 rounds of ammunition? If you had it.
Do you think whoever's coming in, that's going to stop them? Because if you got an AK-47, more than likely they're going to know. If the government is coming after you, this federal government, which is what they quote, that fool, and I haven't played the Alex Jones clip yet. If the tyrannical government is coming for you, do you think you and 6,300 rounds with an AK-47 is going to stop SEAL Team 6 from taking you out? You are a complete fool if you think that's going to help you. If this tyrannical government that they say we have wants to come and get you and your guns, they are going to come and get you and your guns, and there won't be a damn thing that you can do about it. Nada. So their reasoning is completely psychotic. That was put in 1776 to prevent a tyrannical government from doing it, because they could do it back then. We have a constitution now that prevents all of this. This is not going to happen. And all it does, having an AK-47, is giving some spineless, ballless man a bigger you-know-what, because they have no balls. And they don't have a you-know-what that goes with the balls. So therefore, they need to have something that makes them a man. I was listening to Matt Dillon one time, Gunsmoke. You know, back in Tombstone territory, Dodge City, you weren't allowed to carry a gun in town. You had to check it at the daggone front before you entered the town, with the deputy marshal at the front of the town. You had to check your guns there or check it in with the sheriff or the marshal when you came into town. If they didn't allow it in Dodge City and Tombstone, why the hell do you need to have it now? This is a bunch of crap. These people are so freaking, it's just a substitute. It's a substitute for you-know-what with these guys. They think this gives them the balls. It don't. It's pretend. like they used to do when they were kiddies. They're pretending that they're the big man. And as Marshall Dillon said, you know, at the beginning of the Gunsmoke, they asked James Arness, they said, you know what, in that first opening scene of Gunsmoke, the guy always outdraws you and fires first. He said, yeah. Well, you see, you don't have to be the fastest. You just got to be the one who shoots the straightest. He drew faster, but he was scared. That's why he missed. And that's what's going to happen to all these so-called gun owners, teachers. They're going to take their guns in the country. 90% of them won't even get their gun. If they do, they'll be sitting in the closet with their kids with the gun. They will not go out and face the music and face the person with that AK-47 or the other gun. It don't even have to be an AK-47. When you have to look at someone in their eye who has a gun on you and you need to defend yourself, over 70% of the people will piss their pants first. And if you haven't had a gun in your hand where somebody was firing back at you, don't tell me that you know I'll do just what they do on TV. That's a load of crap. It don't work that way. They want everybody to believe you can be Rambo and you can be Clint Eastwood. It don't work that way when somebody's firing back at you. Unless, you know what? It's so stupid. Back in New York last year sometime, and I forgot what time it was, trained policemen were after a bank robber in Manhattan. 9 civilians got shot while they were chasing this one bank robber down the street. And these are from trained policemen who have to know how to handle the weapon. They were firing at this guy, and innocent bystanders got shot by trained policemen. Are these teachers going to be trained as much as New York City's finest? Hell no. You know it, and I know it. Let me get over here and play a little bit of what a real hero said about carrying an AK-47. Retired General Stanley McChrystal. Let's see what he had to say about it.
General, I want to ask you a bit more about the Rolling Stone article, but first we have Mayor Bloomberg coming up, and one of his big issues is guns. And I'm just wondering, curious, does assault weapons like the Bushmaster have a place in our society here in America? What is your position, especially given the recent events?
Yeah, I spent a career carrying typically either an M16 and then later an M4 carbine. And an M4 carbine fires a 223 caliber round, which is 5.56 millimeter, at about 3,000 feet per second. When it hits a human body, the effects are devastating. It's designed to do that. And that's what our soldiers ought to carry. I personally don't think there's any need for that kind of weaponry on the streets, and particularly in around the schools in America. I believe that we've got to take a serious look. I understand everybody's desire to have whatever they want, but we've got to protect our children, we've got to protect our police, we've got to protect our population, and I think we've got to take a very mature look at that.
So we're talking about background checks, we're talking about banning certain types of assault weapons, we're talking about trying to reduce the number of these guns and the ammunition that feeds them in our society. First of all, do you think that's possible? And would you support legislation? Would you, I don't know, go around the country and actually be very vocal about this?
I think serious action is necessary. sometimes we talk about very limited actions on the edges, and I just don't think that's enough. I think we'll find out.
What's your message to the NRA, to members of the House Judiciary Committee, Republicans, who say this isn't a topic for federal legislation?
I think my message is we've got to look at the situation in America. The number of people in America killed by firearms is extraordinary compared to other nations, and I don't think we're a bloodthirsty culture. And so I think that we need to look at everything we can do to safeguard our people.
I appreciate your honesty on this.
That was former head of the our soldiers in Afghanistan, retired General Stanley McChrystal. I mean, you know, why do we have to have an M16 or AK-47 to defend yourself? You don't need it. Because first of all, most of the people who come in don't have... I mean, can you believe this? Yes, I was just robbed.
Were you robbed?
Yeah. They broke into my house. They broke into your house, huh? And they had AK-47s. Now, why would someone break into your house with an AK-47? I mean, I don't understand that. What, do they think you have a tank in your house? Bazooka? This is not... This is all rhetoric postulating what this daggone gun dealers and gun manufacturers have put out there. You know, that was a big thing when Clint Eastwood was playing Dirty Harry in his 44. Biggest handgun, most powerful handgun in the world. A lot of people wanted to, but a lot of people, when it got a hold of it, felt how heavy it was, and when it fired, it almost broke off their wrist. They said, nah, I don't think we're going to do this. So I guess you're not as manly as Clint Eastwood did. And, you know, some of the things, some of the rhetoric. I want to get around to playing this this Alex Jones, Piers Morgan, because, but I just wanted to play something first that, you know, the NRA is using as part of their strategy. They had this great spokesperson for them. Just listen.
Last Saturday.
Good evening, everybody. This is Archie Bunker of 704 Hauser Street, veteran of the Big War, speaking on behalf of Guns for Everybody. Now, question. What was the first thing that the communists done when they took over Russia? Answer, gun control. And there's a lot of people in this country want to do the same thing to us here in a kind of conspiracy, see. You take your big international bankers, they want to, masticate the people of this here nation like puppets on a wing. And then when they get that done, turn us over to the communists.
I'm glad they put you on the stool. You look tall and sitting down.
Now, I want to talk about another thing that's on everybody's mind today, and that's your stick-ups and your skyjackings, which, if that was up to me, I could end the skyjackings tomorrow.
You could?
All you got to do is arm all your passengers. He ain't got no more superiority there. He ain't going to dare to pull out no rod. And then your airlines, then they wouldn't have to chase the passengers on the ground no more. They just pass out the pistols at the beginning of the trip, and then pick them up again at the end. Case closed.
That's incredible.
That is incredible. You know, I didn't know it was that easy to have gun control and to prevent people from skyjacking planes and from shooting up people. Isn't that what we did? Didn't we pass out guns to all the passengers? No, that's not what we did. Nobody is more adept at gun control than the Israelis. They didn't do it. They did not do that. Why? Why didn't that work? I wonder. But in Utah, for the last 12 years, teachers could carry guns in the classroom, concealed. Nobody knew about it. When Ed Schultz asked this Carolyn Kane, she says, do you think parents, Ed said to her, do you think parents need to know that their teacher is carrying a gun in the classroom? She says, I don't know. I don't think so. He said, don't you think they have a right to know that there's a gun around their child? She says, no. Then he said, it's a private, it's a concealed weapon. So no one needs to know. It's a concealed weapon, so no one needs to know. I mean, this is, and she is so sincere because she's been brainwashed to believe this. They're the only state in the union that allows guns everywhere, at any time. It's like the Wild Wild West without a marshal or a sheriff or any sort of law in the state. That's what it's like. I mean, Archie Bunker, he might as well be the NRA's spokesperson. Because they believe if they allow one slight, open the door just slightly to get a little bit of light in, that will be the end. And it would be the end, because you know why? Because over 66% of the people who are NRA members right now want better gun control. How can putting people who buy guns in a database, so when someone wants to buy another gun, we know that they just got one? Why do you need to purchase 5 guns a week? Why do you need to purchase 1,000 rounds of ammunition a week? Why do you need 100 round clips? If you're going to go target shooting, get a 10 round clip, buy 10 of them. Why do you need 100 round clip at one time? The only time you need 100 round clip at one time is if you're defending yourself, like they do in the military. The military defends itself. That's what they're there for. And of course, you know, the Sean Hannitys and the Rush Limbaughs and the Ted Nugents and the O'Reilly's, those cowards that make me sick when I mention their name, because they never would do anything to defend this country because they were outright cowards, along with Dick Cheney, that 7 deferments. These are cowards. Ted Nugent peed in his pants and had a bowel movement in his pants because he didn't want to go to the military where he could get shot. And yet he's going to tell you, he's going around to all the military bases and performing. You know, he can't do that no more. They stopped his butt from doing that because he's a coward, outright coward. He wouldn't say boo to you in the street unless he had 5 guys around him. But yet he's the one that's telling us what we need to do because it's our right thing. I'm big and bad. He's a coward.
So is that Rush Limbaugh, that pimple. He got a pimple on his butt so he couldn't go in the military. Dick Cheney, he 7 deferments because he had, his last one, he said he had better things to do. He had a family. I know plenty of people that have families. Plenty of people who went and died and were wounded drastically in Vietnam. Chuck Hagel was shot twice. His brother was shot 2 or 3 times. As grunts, not officers. Wesley Clark, General Clark, was wounded in the, as a lieutenant. And signaled for help to rain down bombs on his position, close to his position, where he could have got killed to take out the enemy. He didn't sit in the ditch in the jungle and cry and piss his pants like Hannity or Limbaugh or Cheney or Bill Kristol would have done. I was in the Air Force. We had the life. We had our own bodyguards half the time. But hey, we had to handle a weapon. We were told not to do it. The air policeman would fire for us. If he was killed, then they would, then we would have to fire our weapon. But I was in Da Nang. So hey, you can't tell me these people who talk about these people, they don't have the right. They don't have the right to talk about protecting this country because they refused to protect it when they had the chance. Now we have a, you played this other little thing from one of the NRA's spokesperson.
I hate that jerk on TV.
Oh, I get it. When you thought he was talking about VD and a permissive society, he was smart. Now you find out he's talking about gun control, he's a jerk.
That's right, and I'm going to prove it to you. How many people in this U.S. of A would like to have guns?
Too many, thousands.
But how many people would like to have VD?
But that's the way they think. There's no rhyme or reason. There's no rhyme or reason why they think and say what they think. All it is, protect my gun. Because my gun makes me a man. That's what, you know, there was a line, and I hope I can remember the whole thing from A Bronx Tale, where the protagonist, De Niro, was talking to his son because his son was involved with the gangsters that had the bar down at the corner. And he says, yeah, the son was telling his dad, well, you are nothing. You're not a man. He says, you don't have any money. He says, they have money. He says, that doesn't make him a man. A man is a person who gets up every single day and works for his family and provides for his family the best way he can to put food on the table, not to walk around sharkskin suits and flashy cars. A man don't need to carry a gun to prove he's a man. Now, let me play a short segment from well, this is about a 7-minute segment, which is part of a 2-part segment, where this fool, Alex Jones, who's not a man also, who never was in the military, on the Piers Morgan Show, and people might have heard about it, but I'm going to play it for you.
Dave, thank you very much for joining me, and indeed to you, Jessica. Anyone who's watched this show over the past few weeks knows I've taken a pretty strong stand on guns in America. Don't escape the notice of supporters of gun rights, and it's led to a petition on the White House official website, no less. It's entitled, I quote, "Deport British Citizen Piers Morgan for Attacking Second Amendment." Take a look. More than 104,000 people have signed it so far. And joining me now is one of the people behind the petition, Alex Jones. He's host of the Alex Jones Show. Welcome to you.
Piers, thanks for having me.
Why do you want to deport me?
Well, we did it as a way to bring attention to the fact that we have all of these foreigners and the Russian government, the official Chinese government. Mao said political power goes out of the barrel of a gun. He killed about 80 million people because he's the only guy that had the guns. So we did it to point out that this is globalism and the mega banks that control the planet and brag that they've taken over in Bloomberg, AP, Reuters, you name it, brag that they're going to get our guns as well. They've taken everybody's guns but the Swiss and the American people. And when they get our guns, they can have their world tyranny. While the government buys 1.6 billion bullets, armored vehicles, tanks, helicopters, predator drones, armed, now in U.S. skies, being used to arrest people in North Dakota. The Second Amendment isn't there for duck hunting. It's there to protect us from tyrannical government and street thugs. Take the women in India. Your piece earlier on CNN was watching during Anderson Cooper's show. Didn't tell you that the women of India have signed giant petitions to get firearms because the police can't and won't protect them. The answer is, wait a minute, I have FBI crime statistics that come out a year late, 2011. 20+% crime drop in the last 9 years. Real violent crime because more guns means less crime. Britain took the guns 15, 16 years ago. Tripling of your overall violent crime. True, we have a higher gun violence level, but overall muggings, stabbings, deaths, those men raped that woman in India to death with an iron rod 4 feet long. You can't ban the iron rods. The guns, the iron rods, Pierce, didn't do it. The tyrants did it. Hitler took the guns. Stalin took the guns. Mao took the guns. Fidel Castro took the guns. Hugo Chavez took the guns. And I'm here to tell you, 1776 will commence again if you try to take our firearms. Doesn't matter how many lemmings you get out there on the street begging for them to have their guns taken. We will not relinquish them. Do you understand? That's why you're going to fail, and the establishment knows, no matter how much propaganda, the Republic will rise again when you attempt to take our guns. My family in the Texas Revolution against Santa Anna, my family was at the core on both sides starting that because Santa Anna came to take the guns at Gonzales, Texas. Pierce? Don't try what your ancestors did before. Why don't you come to America? I'll take you out shooting. You can become an American and join the Republic.
You finished?
Yes, I am finished. You will not take my right. You go through background checks to get guns. How about Prozac? You know the number one. Oh, that's a big sponsor, isn't it? Or that whole class of drugs.
Let me ask you a question.
Oh, got to cut that off, don't you?
No,
don't want to talk about the U.S. number one cause of death is suicide now because they give people suicide murder pills.
Calm down.
Your answer is give more money to the psychiatrist and psychologist to put more crazy people on drugs that make them kill people, Pierce.
Let's try and have a debate here.
Yeah.
Answer me this question.
Mm-hmm. I'm sick of the same old script here, Bud.
It's fine, Bud. How many gun murders were there in America last year? Do you know?
There were about 11,458, and about 74% of those were gang-related, gangbangers shooting each other. You get 3,500 to 4,000.
That wasn't the case.
How many people died from infections in hospitals? 197,000.
Let me just ask a second.
That's right.
How many gun murders were there in Britain?
How many great white sharks?
No, how many
kill people every year, but they're scared to swim?
Right. How many gun murders were there in Britain?
A very low amount. I already went over those statistics.
You know?
I was only a few hundred.
No. How many gun murders?
I actually did pull up the statistics. Here, let me pull them out right here. I figured you'd do that.
Gun murders.
Oh, wait.
In last
UK
year.
Violent crime, capital of Europe. Right. London Telegraph. Here, let me
it's
give you
quite
more.
A simple question.
Well, that's the oldest.
You're very loud.
That's the
old, man.
No, that's the oldest Perry Mason tactic to ask me some little factoid.
So that's not a little factoid.
I already said earlier,
we're talking about
England has a lot lower gun crime rate because you took all the guns.
Let me try exactly
but
my
you've
point.
Got hordes of people burning down cities and beating old women's brains out every day.
What a ridiculous
They arrest
thing.
People in England if they defend themselves. That's on record. My God, you have got a total police state. Everybody's fleeing that country because you've had to flee here, bud. Why don't you tell folks?
It.
Yeah, you fled here. Why don't you go back and face the charges for the hacking scandal?
Answer this question. How many
Why'd you get fired from the Daily Mirror for putting out fake stories?
How
You're a hatchet
many,
man of the New World Order.
Okay.
You're a hatchet man. And I want to say this right here. You think you're a tough guy? Head me back with a boxing ring in here, and I'll wear red, white, and blue, and you can wear your Jolly Roger.
Okay.
You know what?
Let's try again. How many gun murders were there?
Oh, you're going to ban your fist now?
In Britain last year.
How many chimpanzees can dance on the head of a pin?
Hmm.
I already went over those statistics.
Do you know the answer?
No, I don't.
You said hundreds.
It's very low.
You said hundreds.
Yes.
It's actually 35.
Well, the point is you can...
Against 11... thousands. Do you understand the difference in 11,000?
Yeah, England wants to ban knives now because tens of thousands are getting stabbed.
Right. But do you understand the difference?
The knife doesn't kill people.
Do you understand?
The gun doesn't kill people.
Yes.
Listen, do you understand? You're not going to pull on America's heartstrings. They know your script, okay? You're not going to get our guns. By the way, you guys always say, we just want to take the semi-autos, okay, and all this other stuff. When semi-autos aren't even, rifles aren't even used but in a fraction of the crimes, you can pull those numbers up, okay? Hold on.
So let me ask you one question. Which weapon was predominantly used in the Aurora movie theater shooting?
M4 AR-15 variant.
So it was a semi-automatic assault rifle.
Again.
Okay,
but statistically, it's very, very low.
That was. Do you agree it was the single biggest shooting in the history of America in terms of people hit by a shooter? Do you know that?
No, I believe that there were others. Shootings, but about over 30.
No. This was the single biggest mass shooting.
Well, listen, there have been bombings of Wall Street.
Let me ask you a second question.
Why can't the pilots have firearms? We trust them to fly the planes.
You've had a lot to say.
No, my point is the Second Amendment is sacrosanct, and you're not getting it.
Do you know which weapon was used in the Oregon shopping mall mass shooting recently?
I understand that people who are mentally ill on all the serotonin reuptake inhibitors who play these shoot-em-up games want to go out and do this.
Alex.
Because there's criminals, I don't lose my rights, Pierce. Because there's criminals, I don't lose my rights.
Just answer the question.
Yeah.
Do you know what the weapon used was?
Listen, let me ask you a question.
No, answer.
I've got the FBI statistics that, the so-called semi-autos that you talk
about. Take a break. When we come back.
Again, you're not going to get our guns.
When we come back, try and answer my question.
Yeah, all you're going to do is sit there and play little factoid questions.
Yeah.
Overall crime has gone up over 20%. More.
Now, I mean, is this impossible? And that's just the first part of it. And right now joining us is our producer who's in Washington, D.C., with his assault weapon, trying to get it into the Capitol. Oh, no? That's not true.
No, that's not true. Absolutely not.
Okay.
But before you ask me any questions, let me yell at you a little bit, because that's what I hear. That's the way we talk around here.
Absolutely. Hey,
so,
I mean,
did you
Alex Jones.
Yes.
And that was Alex Jones on the Piers Morgan, and when he came back, it got worse. I mean, I've been talking about, when I first came on, I must have hit I don't know if it came through or not over the air, but my daggone microphone wasn't on for about 20 minutes or 15 minutes. And I just ran in a rave. I guess I'm glad people didn't hear it because I was going ballistic here about this Ted Nugent, this fool who pissed in his pants and did number two in his pants. So the Army, when he went to the draft board, they told him to get the hell out of here. I mean, this is the man who's a big, tough guy. And if anybody took a gun and shot at him, he would run like a scared rabbit if he had 14 M16s.
Well, that's one of the problems that I had with the non-debate that they just had. He's just ranting and raving and screaming and, shouting Pierce down. And every time he tries to answer or ask a question, he won't answer. He'll just, raise the stakes. And to the point that he started saying, hey, get in a ring. I'll beat you up. I'll put on American flag trunks, And it's just insulting thugism.
All it is.
No, it is. I mean, he can't even answer the question because the question was what weapon was used over and over, and it's an AR-115.
Right.
But they come up with this, we're not going to actually talk facts, we're just going to scream and rant and rave. And it's the same thing, they did with Obama. There was no facts during any election. It's just that he's somehow an Islamic plant that's un-American and evil, and, there's no facts to be had. Let's just yell and scream at each other.
Operate. Just like Drudge. Here's Drudge the other day. He puts on the daggone front of his website a picture of Stalin, Hitler, and Obama. I mean, this is just completely... Oh, and then you notice what Alex Jones said. Yes, that's what That's what the Chinese did, and the Germans did. Well, the Germans did no such thing. Hitler wanted everybody to have arms because he wanted all Germans to fight for the country. So that's nonsense. He's lying when he says that.
Of course. I mean, and again, you see the conflation. You know, we've talked about this since Obama was elected. You know, they always call him a fascist and a communist, you know, all these things at once, just whatever bad poster boy dictator they can think of to throw in there. But the point is, again, it's demonization of something without actually, you know, debating the merits of a presidency or his policies. It's just the let's make an evil poster and, you know, put horns on it and pretend it's the devil. You know, that's the whole point. But the problem with that is, which we saw with Ms. Palin, was, you know, she ran a website with actual sniper sites on all the Democratic candidates.
Right. Yeah, I remember that.
And then when someone gets shot in the head on her, you know, sniper site, then she could, it's nothing to do with my site. You know, nothing. No, I didn't do anything. But it is. It feeds itself. And when you're sitting there screaming at someone on TV that, you know, you're un-American, get in the ring, I'll beat you up, you know, your country is has hordes of people raping and killing and pillaging because they've taken the guns away and, you know, you're trying to bring your evil ways here, it demonizes instead of having any kind of coherent debate. You know, Piers Morgan is now the, you know, tyrannical invader from Britain, you know, or something.
Well, he's a foreigner. He says he fled from Britain. Why don't you go back there and face the charges? He has no charges. Yeah, he worked for that newspaper, but he was never charged with anything. So see how they it's just like they did. And you hate to keep going back to using the Nazi references because it's so outrageous, but they do the same thing that the Nazis and Goebbels did. Say the lies long enough and loud enough, and
right.
Morons will believe it.
Oh, no, this is exactly it. I mean, they demonized an entire people and said, you know, you can't trust them. They're evil. They're stealing your money. They're corrupting you. You know, they're trying to take your children out of you. Now let's round them up and get them out of your neighborhood and let's put them over here in a safe camp. You know what I mean? But that is the end result. And that's what I really want to focus on is it's not just noise. You know, it's not just BS. It's a coherent scream that is intentional, and it's been, I think, extremely detrimental to our national policy. We don't have debates anymore. We now have supposed politicians who sit in the Congress and yell at the president during State of the Unions. You know, we have vice presidential candidates who are running websites with sniper marked, you know, emblems of their opponents. I mean, this isn't rational. This isn't funny. This isn't, you know, I mean, it is very disturbing and it's very sinister, and it's going to lead to what we see. And that is people who are slightly deranged or stupid or easily led or confused about what the world is really like are going to believe, you know, the screaming rhetoric, and they're going to act to defend what they think is being taken away or being lost or whatever their fear is. And that is what happens, and that's why we get these horrific shootings and attacks. You know, I mean, we had, black congressman being spit on the steps of the Congress back a few years ago during a campaign. You know, this isn't normal behavior. And I think that people really need to look. It's not just empty rhetoric, and it's not unintentional, if you will. And that's the real danger.
Oh, yeah, well, you're absolutely correct. And that's the problem that let me turn this phone on. I forgot I had my phone on. Anyway, no, you're absolutely correct. These people But you see, I played, and you probably didn't hear it. On the Ed Schultz show last night, Ed had on this woman, Carolyn Kane, who's a teacher in Utah. And she was one of the people that went to the class on how to handle a gun. And Ed asked her a question last night. And, you know, and I don't think she's one of these wackos. I think she was very sincere, but she knows absolutely nothing what she's talking about.
Right.
She went to this class. She said, oh, I saw that. And said, I've always been thinking about a gun. And when I found out that we can carry a gun in Utah. Utah teachers have been carrying a gun for the last 12 years. Concealed. Nobody, none of the parents. And when Ed asked her, well, what do you think about, don't you think the parents should know that their teacher is carrying a gun? And she says, well, no, I don't think they have the right to know that because it's concealed.
So the parent doesn't have the right to know that their child is being put into a armed environment against, you know, this is the insanity. You know, you can't take a child to the science museum without 14 layers of written permission slips. But you can have a weapon in the classroom without the parent even being aware because it's not their right to know.
And he said that. He said, no, they don't have the right because that's why it's concealed. No one knows you have it. So then he says to her, he says, what happens if the person coming into the school has an AK-47? She couldn't give an answer to that because she would wet her pants and run in the closet with the kids. You know, these people think that they can go out and oh yeah, I got a Glock. Yeah, when the person comes in with a 100 clip AK-47 and shoots the locks off the front door, you, as a first time gun holder, are gonna go out and confront that person? That is absolutely stupidity even to imagining that happening.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, we talked about this in several times before. You can't have, you know, they should be focusing on teaching. You can't have teachers, you know, trained as special forces. You know, you can't have them being armed. And again, just as you said, when somebody comes in with a semi-automatic weapon, you know, the guy in Newtown was blowing the security locked doors off with his gun.
Right.
You can't say that their little concealed, 38 special or something that they have somewhere is going to do anything. And again, it's going to have to be secured. So we talked about this before too. Even if you had a weapon there, it's going to have to be somewhere that it's locked up that the children can't get to all the time, or else, you know, we're going to have, you know, 10,000 fatalities a year when little Timmy plays with a gun. So you're going to have a situation where they're trying to unlock a drawer or the closet or whatever and getting shot 30 times with the, you know.
Yeah, well, listen, here's the thing. Okay, so where in a classroom would you store a gun where the kids wouldn't know there was a gun there? Oh, all of a sudden, every classroom has a steel combination lock vault.
Right.
The kids are going to say, well, wait a minute, what's that vault for? She teaches kids from kindergarten to the sixth grade. What, do they think these kids are completely brain dead? Is that what's going on in Utah? The kids are completely brain dead? And then she says, well, no, they won't know about it. So she's on a worldwide show, and she doesn't think that parents are going to be listening to what she just said?
Exactly. Look, it's just like the fallacy, you know, you have a Christmas gift under the bed and the kid, you know, finds it. They know everything that goes on in that classroom.
Absolutely.
They live there
all
day, every day, and they go through everything. They know where every pencil is and the sharpener and the eraser for the board and where the cleaner is for this and where the paper towel is for that. I mean, come on. You cannot hide something, especially as important as a weapon.
So she hides it in a holster on her hip, and she tells the kids, oh, that's my cell phone.
Yeah, yeah. Well, again, to get back to basics, a couple of things. Say every teacher is armed in America. Let's just go with that. Every teacher has a gun right on the hip. They don't even have to run to the closet to unlock it. It's right there, and it's loaded, ready to go like the old West.
Right.
You know, let's go with that.
Right.
I, A, don't want guns anywhere near children, the end. But, B, say they have a gun. You have to have extensive training. You know, I know all of the teachers that I deal with all the time with my kids. I teach. I know the teachers I deal with at my school. I don't want any of them with a gun. But that aside, say they've been trained and they're somehow proficient. You're still telling me there's not going to be danger in having a rattled, scared-to-death teacher shooting, what, wildly over the heads of the children at the guy coming through the door or something? I mean, what scenario doesn't endanger 30 children instantly? You know, what scenario is safe?
I had mentioned this before you came on. Just this, and we might have talked about it on the show before, this past year in New York City, there was a bank robbery, and the police were called in, and they were chasing this bandit down the street, the police, and they shot 9 innocent bystanders. And these are professional policemen who are trained and have to be certified every couple of months in shooting.
Right. I mean, these are the law professionals.
Right.
And that's what I'm saying. I mean,
or a guy, you're going to get a woman or a guy that goes and gets some training from some schlock outfit, and she's now, oh, man, I'm Dirty Harry. Yeah, well, there she's as much going to be Dirty Harry as Rush Limbaugh, Dick Cheney, Bill Kristol, Hannity, all those cowards who did not defend this country in Vietnam. They ran like cowards and pissed in their pants because they were afraid to go fight somebody who had a gun pointed at them.
Well,
it's
even if,
different when someone
like
points a gun at you.
Of course, of course. And that's what I'm saying. No matter how much, you know, a course of something you took or 5 minutes of training you got, a teacher is not a deadly weapons expert. And so you've got that problem. But even if they shoot well and they're okay with the gun, they don't have any problems there, even if that's the case, you're going to have a situation where a guy breaks into a school and shoots in the classroom. That teacher fires back. Let's go with that scenario. Every teacher in there is going to hear gunfire. What do? Come running, start shooting. You know, what's the scenario there? On top of, we talked about this last week, when you fire a weapon, the bullet goes somewhere.
If you
fire in a little room, it's not going to magically, like a movie, bounce off the impenetrable wall and make a ping, you know, it's going to go through because half of the schools have portables, which are the strength, they have the strength of tissue paper. I mean, these things are made out of tinfoil. They're going to go through several of those classrooms. Or if you're in the old cinder block schools, I'm sorry, you can put a gun right through that too. So what is the scenario? What are they talking about? That you can have, the only solution is to have an corral gunfight in a school, and you're not going to have mass casualties. Where is that humanly possible?
Well,
you mean you would have to reinforce every wall with, you know, Kevlar or something to even make them feasible? I mean,
well, but before you came on, I just played the scenario, the spokesman for the NRA. Archie Bunker, where he said that he has the way to stop the hijackers is to give everybody a gun before they get on the plane and collect them after they get off the plane. I mean, so that will prevent. Well, that worked. We did do that, didn't we? No, we didn't do that. How much time do you have? I have your runner. Is it raining there in Washington or what?
Oh, it's been raining. Yep. We've did the long car trip, went through the mountains, did like sightseeing, and it's been dreary the whole way, but, you know, it's okay. It's
is Alex,
just
is Alex,
America.
Is Alex packing? For your protection or what?
Well, you know, this is the new era. We better start. I tell you what, why don't we arm every child? Because
that's right. That's even better.
If a guy's breaking into a room and he knows that only the teacher's armed, he'll shoot there first. But if he's got 30 armed people against him, he won't know where to shoot first. See, that's more safe, right? See, by their logic, that would work.
Hey, absolutely. Well, okay.
Yeah.
I got a great guest coming on. Dr. Dennis Metzger, who is going to be talking about a great device. I want to tell you, it has helped me 1,000,000%. And we're going to have him on this time. We're going to have him on a few more times because we need to talk about this great product that he has out there. It's not a product. It's a machine. But it has done – it's a miracle worker.
This is what happens when you invest in science and technology, Michael. You find devices and cures and aids to society instead of things that destroy it. I'm all about that.
And we need to get rid of, some of these questionable products that just keep you coming back for more and more and more because they don't fix the problem. Anyway. All right, so when are you coming back?
I will be back Monday, sir. Yeah, I'm going to stay up here and enjoy Washington, D.C., meeting with some archaeologists and anthropologists, and just enjoying the sites, going to museums and different functions. So.
Well, brings back some information that we can talk about.
Okay, will do. Well, take
all
care and try to hold
stay
the fort.
Everybody.
Don't let any crazy people on the air.
All right, talk to you. Bye.
All right.
Ooh, gee whiz, I just knocked him off the air. Jesus. What did I do? I just knocked him off the air. What happened, doctor? Call us back. I just took you off the air. Let me give him Dr. Metzger a call back. I don't know what happened here, but it was my fault. Let me call him. Tell him to call me back. I'll just dial in and call back, okay? Okay. Call back, okay. All right. Anyway, I was just about to have to bring up on the line Dr. Dennis Metzger, who is a chiropractor, and he is a major person involved with the chiropractic care, but he also specializes in this DiPulse machine that I have been using, that my doctor, Dr. Philip Turner here in Charlotte, has put me on in the last 2 months. And I'm telling you, it has helped me tremendously.
I'm back with you.
Oh, you're back with us. Yes,
I'm back
you.
On the line. Someone cut me off.
Yes, that was me.
That was you. Okay. So I was enjoying your conversation about the weapons and how to handle the schools. That was really nice.
As a Vietnam vet yourself, you know everybody shouldn't have AK-47s.
You're right. They shouldn't. But they do.
Yes. This is the problem we have. I mean, you might as well have a why not have grenades? Why not have rocket launchers? You know.
I have a couple of friends who race motorcycles, and they're Israeli Navy SEALs, and they say the way that Israel handles that is they actually have women who are proficiently trained, and they carry an AK-47 with them, and they are there to handle the problem. So the teachers don't have to handle, neither do the kids, and they keep the weapons away from the kids and the teachers, and the actual I don't know if they're SEALs or not, but they are special forces.
Well, yeah, but everybody in Israel has to serve in the military.
Yeah, well, they're also in a war zone, so they have a different mindset. They have to be
absolutely.
They are under that fear all the time, you know.
That's right.
We're in America, we don't have that. When you get into a war zone, it's a different ballgame.
Oh, absolutely. I played today with General retired General McChrystal. He said he had M16 and a carbine. And he says civilians do not need that.
Yeah, yeah.
Civilians do not need that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I want to talk about.
Yeah, let's talk about the dipoles. That's a wonderful tool.
And the Mets clinic and racing college programs.
Uh-huh.
And
okay.
I understand you are the founder.
Yes, I am. I being on the racing circuit and the only doctor out there who did it full time, I was required to live in a different type of environment, not one that you would find in the city, but one that you would find on the racing circuit. And it taught me some guidelines that if you didn't follow those guidelines, you were out of there. And so I stayed pretty close to the guidelines, and with that I was able to create a whole new way of practicing. And in the practicing, we were able to find and use only the therapies that were high performers, and the rest of them we just disregarded. And so we are surrounded ourselves with physical therapy and nutrition and every procedure that was highly effective. And we learned how to test so that it wasn't any doubt or guesswork, or that somebody hand up some nutrition and say, come back in 3 weeks and see me. I couldn't do that. I would have race teams come in from California or Europe or Australia, and I had to test them right there to know if it's going to work. And then we would run them through a 2, 3, 4, 5 day series of treatments until we got everyone trained on what they were going to be doing when they got away. And when they got away, they had a program that was really effective. And the program went from their rehab and recovery system, and it worked its way right on into a prevention program so that they wouldn't make the same mistake again.
But when you fall off a motorcycle, though, same mistake.
It's a different ballgame, yeah. We have a little slang saying in racing is that at speed, the motorcycle is really unforgiving.
I that's the first time I got on a motorcycle was when I got to Clark Air Base in the Philippines.
Mm.
I'd never been on a motorcycle before. One of my I was living off base with another sergeant, and he had a motorcycle and a Triumph. And I was scared death of most of them. He used to ride on that. But then he had another one, a dirt bike that he used to race.
Yeah.
But,
well, I've been on the pedicabs over there, too. They are really a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
We stopped Robert Clark on the way over in the back, and we grab a pedicab, uh-huh. which is a little motor scooter that has a sidecar in it. And if
right.
you're willing, you get in the sidecar as this guy drives you around. And everyone just goes every different direction. So over there, it's a little bit more challenging.
I would like you to tell us, I didn't get a chance to talk to it completely yet, but my chiropractor, Philip Turner, here in Charlotte.
He's a really good doctor.
I've known him. I've been going to him since 95. A couple of months ago, because I used to do the stretching. I had to go at least 2 or 3 times a week, and did the stretching and the movement of my back and the spine that really helped me relieve pressure. And he said, well, let's try this machine.
Uh-huh.
So I laid down and I felt nothing. So you might feel a little heat. I didn't feel anything. It was on my back.
Okay.
And I didn't. I said, well, he said, how was it? It was about 15 minutes. I said, I guess it's all right. I didn't feel any different.
Yeah.
But
well,
when I went home about an hour later, normally my back would start bothering me. My wrist would start bothering me. I felt nothing.
Felt wonderful. Actually,
I said, what the heck? I don't even know what he did.
That's wonderful, isn't it?
Oh, man, unbelievable.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
And I said, well, gee whiz. Well, I called him up. I said, I feel good. He says, well, come in. Well, we'll do it again. We'll see how it works. And he did it on my neck and my shoulders. My shoulders are so bad with the problem. I have 3, 4, and 5 in my lumbar area, 3, 4, and 5 in my cervical area. I couldn't lay on my back anymore. And so I had to lay on my side. And now my shoulders started aching so bad. This has really relieved the pressure. It's unbelievable.
You're
so,
right.
But he told me about you because he said you've been doing this for 25 years.
Quite a while. Since 1977. I got my first unit in 1977, and then in 1985 I had changed states to South Carolina where all the racing is, and I called up the Dipulse company and they said, we'd like to put a new machine in your office and we'll make a really great deal. And I couldn't say no to it, so I got a brand new machine, and we became friends, and I started learning all about this amazing machine.
Tell us how this thing works.
Well, technically now, the Dipulse is a non-thermal pulse, high peak power, electromagnetic energy.
In English?
But simply stated, it's just a radio wave, okay? But
right.
There's something unique about the Dipulse. It has the ability to be tuned to the individual so that you can take the machine and tune it, and now the Dipulse can really provide an electromagnetic healing energy that helps the body to heal itself.
Uh-huh.
Now, how it kind of works is kind of like, I use a simple term when I explain it to my writers and the lay patients, is that it works a lot like a generator works in a motorhome. You can use the generator off the car, but it's easier to not wear that system down and use an external power plant like a generator to run your air conditioning and your refrigeration. So when this machine is tuned to you, it actually acts like an outside energy source, putting in the same energy frequency that tissue level has because it's been tuned to it. There is nothing else on the market like it. And the really cool thing is that Dipulse has all the patents on it. So you can basically say that they have a proprietary to the electromagnetic technology, which is amazing. The thing that I've had a hard time understanding is why not more doctors are using it. You know,
that was going to be my next question.
I don't mean to be taking the questions away, but I know in our conversations about you calling and asking me to come on the program, we had some of these things come up, and I said I was just as dumbfounded as you. Why not more doctors aren't using it? You know, it is a high performer. To give you an idea what it can do. When I started a long time ago, I could usually heal a broken bone in about 3 weeks. I started including the Dipulse in the procedure, and now I've got it down to 3 days. Now, that technology, you have to understand, was created and invented by a Dr. Ginsberg in 1930. So the stuff has been around, we're talking 80 years it's been around, and why doesn't more people know about it? Why aren't they using it?
Hold on just a minute. We have another party joining us here.
Okay.
Mr. George Gaffney from Greenville, South Carolina.
Okay.
Mr. Gaffney, how are you?
Okay.
Okay.
I'm
just listening to
Dr. Y'all sit here and talk about our chiropractice.
That's right. That's right. So go ahead, Dr. Metzger. Tell us about it.
You want me to tell you about the Dipulse?
Yeah.
Okay, well,
I have
in my computer about 40 double-blind studies that I have acquired along the way, but the Dipulse is the most studied piece of equipment, and they've done more studies on it than they have all the other therapies combined, and they still are working and amazed at how it works, and they're still learning about it. But the body works on electromagnetics, and when you can tune the frequencies and match the frequencies of the body, then you see accelerated healing because the body doesn't have to supply the energy to do it. It just has to supply the codes to do it.
Right. So in other words, really, it's almost like using magnets to bring pieces together.
That's right. Kind of like the law of attracting and repelling,
like
thoughts bring it together. But the body is really magnetic, and when you use Kirlian photography or something like that, where you can see the aura around the body, you really start to realize a different awareness of how the body works and how it was designed and how to work with it to allow it to do its best job.
Well, I have one. When Dr. Turner put me on the machine, as I said, that I didn't feel anything right away.
Yeah, that's true.
But after a couple of hours, I normally, it's like a nagging pain that I have constantly.
Okay.
And
would you like me to explain that to you?
How I noticed it was, I didn't have it.
That's right.
And I said, what the heck has happened here? You know, I said, boy, the pills are really working good today. Then I realized I didn't take the pills.
No, I don't believe you have to stay on drugs for your whole life. That's not a way to have a good life. But what happens with the dipoles is that you put the energy, tuned energy frequency, which supplies an energy to heal the problem area, but it also charges up the body system. Now, when your electrical energy is low, you'll take on a charge. And when the charge gets built up to where it should be, the body has now an energy to continue doing it. Plus, the electromagnetic field has a residual effect that will last 2 or 3 days. At least that's been my experience. It's kind of like putting a screwdriver to a magnet. And then the screwdriver gets magnetized, and it has a residual magnetic supply. And then the more treatments you get, the higher the magnetic field and the residual supply, and the longer it lasts.
Now, let me ask you a question, because we're going to be talking about the Hall of Fame and these athletes, these baseball players.
Okay.
How the healing properties that we're looking, I just heard about the RG3, that this is the same problem he had in college.
Okay.
ACL.
Okay.
And if he would have used a dipole,
he'd have had a really much better recovery. The probabilities for what they call residual, how much impairment you have, lower the risk factor and reduce the residual. With a dipulse, it greatly reduces the residual of what you have as far as an impairment. Whenever you tear the tissue, you'll have an impairment. And the lower that you can, the better you can reduce the amount of the problem and then keep it from coming back and reoccurring again, which the dipulse has a history of effectively doing. You see players who have a faster rebounce, bounce back. They become more... think of the word right now, but they just respond and get right back up again. And, go ahead.
The thing is that how does this affect people that say, I don't know how I got I have a swelling in my wrist.
Uh-huh.
Now, I was told by the neurologist that was really due from all these years from having this problem in my neck, in my cervical area, which might have caused to have now arthritic problems. But I'm not talking about that. Someone that has a broken bone.
Yeah.
Could they be helped by this?
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. It heals it up. When I have to refer one of my riders to an orthopedic surgeon here in town, or we're working with an orthopedist in another state, we usually have x-rays, and they are just amazed at how fast the body can heal itself when you kick it up a couple of notches. I always felt like the medical people have a tendency to use a slower method compared to what I do on the racing circuit as far as performance. And I don't compete against them. I'm just basically compatible with them. And we look for ways to get along. But with the dipulse on the injuries, they respond and heal so fast, it's just way beyond anyone else's imagination that the body can heal that fast. And I always look for better ways to do it and add more things into the course of treatment so that maybe one day I'll get it down and I can heal a broken bone in a day or a half a day, you know, learning, always looking for better ways to do things.
How long am Dr. Turner puts me on the machine for like 15 minutes in a spot,
mm-hmm.
and you'll change your point. Now, is that a normal, or if you put a person on for an hour, would that make a difference?
Yeah, you can.
Or just overkill?
That was an interesting process resolving that. The actual time is, what I have discovered in the what I have worked with the machine, is the time can vary. Now, if you have a decubitus ulcer or if you have a diabetic lesion, you can run it 30 minutes twice a day, and you're going to see amazing results from that. In fact, if you type in YouTube, and when it comes up on their search engine, you type in the word dipulse, it will take you right to two really great presentations on the dipulse doing decubitus ulcers and diabetic lesions. There are some other machines on there, but they can't be tuned to the energy frequencies, okay?
Right. Yeah, and
but the dipulse
can,
and there's a major difference.
Yeah.
When you see it, you go, whoa, because no one else has had any success with it.
Right. I know the tuning is just like we were talking about before with the radar. You tune the cavity in the radar to get different frequencies. But see, what I was interested in, and we're going to have, I knew you got to run because you got patients, and so glad to have you for this short amount of time.
Yeah.
But the thing is that I was worried about, and I'm thinking about, that the public needs to know about this because I'm telling you, it really, really has worked. And it has worked on me.
It's an amazing machine, and you have to experience it so that you can start asking right questions, because it sounds like it's too good to be true. And when you get on it, you go, holy cow.
But you won't say that right away. You'll say that in about two hours.
Yeah. When you get a massage, when you go outside within an hour or so, it's completely gone away. When you get on a dipulse and get out, that electromagnetic field is still kicking up, and you'll still feel it into the next day. And if you get a follow-up treatment within 24 to 48 hours, you'll boost that one, and you get an accumulated effect. This is really nice.
But see, but it's too expensive for normal people just to buy. I mean, would the insurance pay for this?
Yeah,
no,
insurance pays for electrotherapy, and
they wouldn't pay for you to have the machine in your house.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, the Joint Chiefs.
They do?
Yeah, the Joint Chiefs actually paid. Came up with I forget what the code, because I never use it, but I do know the Joint Chiefs put the whole thing together so that you could have a machine go into your house, and they have that available.
There are some amazing
things, but anyway, what I would recommend to your listeners, okay, is for them to find a doctor who already is using a dipulse in their office.
This
way they'll be off to a good start of being able to actually don't have to use drugs for the rest of your life. You can get on the machine, and the machine will just basically allow your body to heal itself at an amazing speed.
This is, ladies and gentlemen, I am going down to visit Dr. Metzger probably next month. I'm going to see this machine apart. He's going to show me how it works. And we're going to have him back again, and maybe we can have the manufacturer, if we can get him together, to have him on the show also.
That'd be great. I think that Mr. Ross would like to come down.
So,
or at least get on the phone.
He's busy, but I'm
sure he'll take a break for this.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I just want to thank you for your time. I know you're busy. You get back to your patients. But we'll have maybe next week. We can work out a time where you can come back on and talk about some of the things that you have done, especially on the racing circuit with this machine.
Okay, I would love to do that.
All right.
Okay.
I appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me on the program. And
listen, how can people get a hold of you if they want to speak to you? Give us a phone number or email address or something.
How about an email address, okay?
Right,
I don't
want to
tie up my practice lines.
No, that's
not.
What's an email address?
I'm part of at least 15 different race teams in the United States and two in Europe, and we'll have race meetings, and we'll have talk about protocols. And most of the race teams have their own dipulses anyway, so they call into me. They get a protocol, and I'll tell them what to do, and we'll keep it updated about every 6 to 8 hours and make sure that they're on course with what's supposed to be happening. And then after the first 24 hours, we can predict when that injury is going to be well again.
Oh, gosh.
So
I
can't dial my phone lines.
Let me
give you an email address, okay?
Right. Okay.
Okay. It's Dennis, D-E-N-N-I-S, Metzger, M-E-D-S-K-E-R, at att.net.
Okay.
And
very
make
good.
Sure that when you put in what it's about, put in about dipulse information, and I'll know that you guys are coming in and wanting some more information about it.
And,
okay?
And that dipulse and
if I can,
is
D-I-A. Find a, pardon?
And that dipulse is D-I-A-P-U-L-S-E, correct?
Yes, yes. Die like through and pulse. Okay?
Right.
And I want to
that's...
say that this is not a diathermy unit, and nor is it a pulse diathermy unit. Those things produce heat. This is non-thermal. So you can put it anywhere
not.
In the body, just on
right.
anything and everything. You have to be
absolutely.
Careful if you have the pacemaker because it has to be shielded, but there's
right.
no contraindications for the machine at all.
Right. Okay, very good.
Okay, listen,
thank
you very much, and I enjoyed it.
I will be talking to you. Thank you.
Be well, my friend, be well.
Bye-bye, you too. Bye-bye. That was Dr. Dennis Metzger, a Vietnam vet. I forgot to ask him. I don't know. Yeah, he was there the same time I was. Okay, so anyway, Mr. Gaffney.
Yes, sir.
Maybe your best friend in the whole wide world of sports, you know who, could have used this to help him get stronger instead of steroids.
Well, all I can think about is when his girlfriend came out in print and said that the steroids helped one of his organs to get bigger and another one to get smaller. And most
we
people wouldn't
talking
make
about
that
his baseball bat. Are we talking
most
about
people,
his baseball bat?
Most people wouldn't make that. Most people wouldn't have made that trade. Well, let me just say his head's the one that got bigger. So,
well, hey, now wait a minute. Are you kidding me? Well, this. I was just talking about this or when I first came on about all these guys that talk so much about how they need to handle their weapon. I mean, this is really I need to get a psychiatrist on here because I think these people talking about these weapons, these AK-47s, it's because they must have a smaller weapon that they can't use. So is this a Freudian slip with them that this weapon represents manlyhood?
Well, it's a phallic, it can be a phallic symbol.
And I also thought, I was trying to quote, maybe you are, since you're the movie aficionado, about what De Niro said to his son in Bronx Tale about what a man is. A man gets up every day and goes to work.
He said, if these
that's
guys are real men, that's a man to go out and work every day.
That's right.
And he said, that makes you a man. Not to hang around the bar and stuff all day.
Yeah, not to hang around the bar. Right, and carry a gun, a bigger gun than the next person. So, all right. So we had, this is the first time, in my years in watching, I believe it might have been another time, but I think it's the first time no one was selected.
I think it's happened 8 times since 1936 or something, or 1932.
Right, but
something
I don't
like
think
that. But
been,
I mean, that's
since,
but that
since
some of those were war
up,
years.
Right,
but some of those were war years, so that was the reason that nobody got in. It was a war year, during the war.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like that. So, but there's normally it's very rare to have no one inducted.
Now I'm surprised that Piazza wasn't inducted because but is he linked to this also?
No, but again it what happens is it's not like everybody said let's go for one guy. Piazza was all right, but he had issues too. And he's not like he's got to be an automatic first timer.
Well,
that's
he's hit more home runs than any other catcher. He's got more, he's a higher batting average than any other catcher. I mean, what more do you need?
Yeah, but again, Dave, what happens is I'm just saying that I don't know if this was his first time on the ballot, maybe it wasn't.
Yeah,
but
it was.
If you're first timer, that's an extra honor, and they deny you that. Extra honor. You're good, but to be a first timer is an extra And that's what they did with Clement and their bronzes. They denied them that honor. So even if they were to get in later, they missed that extra honor, the extraordinary honor of being a first ballot Hall of Famer.
So they got 36%. Big Head got 36%, and Clemens got 36. I think 2 points lower.
Yeah, 0.2 points
lower. But so that means that 36% of the Hall of Fame team is going to vote for him. So when these other people die out, they'll get in the year 2030.
Yeah, and I won't have to worry about seeing it, and I'll be happy. But what happens is, you know what? Again, me and you discussed this off the air, is that your heroes are. They say basically your heroes in sports are people that you attached yourself to before the age of 26. You know what I mean? If you're 30 years old and somebody comes along and is supposed to be a superstar like LeBron and them, they're not going to be yours. If you're a kid, you're 12 years old, and you're running out to see Sandy Koufax or Carl Furillo or some of Jackie Robinson, you can't show up at 40 and idolize somebody.
Mm-hmm.
You're 40 years old. I don't care what the guy does. He can jump 55 feet in a high jump. He can run a mile in 2 seconds. It doesn't matter. Your childhood is when you grow up with a star. Oscar Robinson's the greatest basketball player in the world to me because I grew up with Oscar Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? I'm not going to look at some kid now. I don't care if he scores 90 points a game. He won't mean the same.
Well, but this is the reason why you're saying that, too. Because
these sports writers that are coming up.
Yeah, but see, that these guys are lame because there is a reason. You know darn well, as my grandfather Major used to say, he said, he's all field but no hit. I mean, you got guys today getting $27 million contracts who can't hit a lick on a field that is smooth like glass and never gets a bad bump. But yet they're getting $27 million. And that's because the whole sports arena has been besmirched by and diluted by expansion.
Well,
it's no longer the best players are there. The best players are there, but they got these mediocre players that are driving down their numbers.
But also, I'm telling you now, I was saying this to somebody last week or earlier this week. Sonny Weblen changed. He changed everything when he signed Joe Namath. Because
right.
He said he changed the whole game when he said sports is not sports. Sports is entertainment.
Right.
He said, that's why the athletes got paid. Remember, Joe. Guys were making $50,000. The star quarterback was making $50,000. Joe signed for $400,000 plus a $50,000 bonus on top of the $400,000, and all the players hated him. And then the agent said, "No, you're making a mistake."
Right.
They said, "If they pay him $450,000 to throw the ball, they're going to pay you more to protect him while he's throwing the ball. They're going to pay you more to catch it when he's throwing the ball, and they're going to pay a guy on the other side of the line more money to knock him down when he's throwing the ball." He's making money for everybody.
Right,
and because it's no longer sports. It's entertainment.
It's entertainment.
And
that
changed things, too. So, you know, if you got a clown out there taking drugs and he can entertain people by hitting the ball and his warning track shots become home runs, then go with it. You know, these guys are out there for the money, and and that's the thing. It's a TV show, just like they said. You know, the era of going to the stadium is gonna. They're really gonna. I'm telling you, the next cycle you're gonna see is they're gonna build studios for the games and not stadiums.
Well, yes. Well, you know that's correct because years ago, they said that. That one of the main reasons why they wanted these large TVs was because, and closed circuit, is because that they can make more money in a closed circuit event in a studio a fight, having a world championship fight in a studio with just a couple of gaffers, a director, a producer. That 50, that's right. That they could if they sold out Yankee Stadium. So, and then they could control the weather. They could control everything. Everything is perfect. So, and they want to do this with Broadway shows. They want to show Broadway shows on television. First one, pay $60. Now, if you're in Greenville, South Carolina, and you want to go see Les Mis in New York City on Broadway, you got to pay the airline ticket of $300 round trip. Then you got to pay the $150 ticket for the see the show. Then you got to pay the hotel another $100, and then you're not going to go there and not eat. And so then you might have to buy a couple of shoes to walk. You might have to buy another shirt. I mean, so therefore, it's going to cost you maybe $800, $900 to go see a Broadway show when you could pay $2,750 and see it on
Mr.
the TV
Lawson,
in your living room.
And Mr. Lawson,
what?
You're not going alone. You're not sitting there by yourself. So that $800 has become $1,600. You're not
unless
sitting there
alone.
Unless
you go there to meet somebody who's going to buy your ticket for you.
But that's the whole
area.
Well, remember, it's like the type of thing that you saw in James Caan's Rollerball, where everything was, the television was a real thing for the games. The games were televised. Remember the Rollerball games?
Right.
You know, that was the television was the whole thing. They didn't care about the crowd that was at the game. That was chump change.
That was just background. That's right.
That was background noise. They wanted the television audience.
Who was the guy? The first
Jonathan James Caan was
first,
Jonathan.
The first guy who was the head of the FCC said television is a vast wasteland.
Oh, wasteland. Newton Minow.
Yeah, Newton Minow said television is a
vast wasteland.
How wrong was he?
Well,
here's the other thing.
Here's the other thing. This generation is walking around with a television in their pocket. Our televisions used to weigh about 500 pounds. And you were lucky to have one. And now, when I grew up, I thought I would never, ever be able to afford a color television set. Now you can't buy a black and white TV set.
Oh, no, you can't. But, hey, listen.
You got to be security.
I was the first one. My brother and I were the first ones in my class, elementary school, in my class, the third grade class, that had a television. And we had a television. I think it was a 60. It was huge. And what my father did, we were sick one time with the chicken pox. And what he did was he went out and bought one of these huge magnifying glasses that they used to use for the TVs to make the picture big enough. And we were sitting in the bed. And what he did was he took a floor-length mirror, put the magnifying glass in front of the TV in the hallway on an angle, and we would watch TV from our bed. And what they did was, because it was black and white, he went out and bought the plastic color screen that you could put on the screen?
That was color television.
Color television. The screen, the sky
yellow,
was
blue,
always
green.
Blue.
I think
it was
three colors, blue. Yellow, blue, and green.
Even though it was showing something that was in the office. The office ceiling was blue. But it was unbelievable. People don't believe that. And it's really unbelievable. As you said, you can walk around now with your PDA and watch television.
And did I mention this on the show recently? I think I did it last week, how times have changed. I'm telling you, there was an episode of Dragnet. Did I mention that? The episode of Dragnet where they had arrested somebody and put him in jail for attempted murder. But the guy also had a charge of burglary or something. He made bail on the burglary, and they were trying to reach the girl who he had tried to kill. She was a witness or something. Right. They wanted to tell her to keep her doors locked that this guy was out because it was a mistake made.
Right.
The cops had to pull into a gas station to use the telephone. The telephone booth didn't. The telephone booth was out. Then they drove to a drugstore, and the drugstore was closed. And then they finally found a bar, and they went in the bar and went to the phone booth in the bar to call the woman to tell her that her life was in jeopardy. This is the police. This is Joe Friday and Ben Alexander riding around having to find a telephone booth. Now people can't go to the bathroom without calling you and telling you, I'm going to the bathroom. I'll be out
in
a little while.
Yeah, I'm getting a twitch right now. Oh, the bathroom is dirty in this place. I mean, give me a break. You're absolutely correct. But is that amazing or is that not amazing? And I just want to play this. This is how crazy it is.
I know exactly what he'll tell you. Lies. He was no different from any other officer in the wardroom. They were all disloyal. I tried to run the ship properly with the book, but they fought me at every turn.
Lieutenant Commander Philip Francis Queeg.
And here's the thing, the lies. This is what your boy, Big Head, we shouldn't mention his name, I guess. Anyway, said during his hearing. And he's still not in jail. Now, is this a jailable offense, in your opinion?
It shouldn't. I don't think it should go. It doesn't need to go outside the realm of the sport. I think the sport should actually have policed it. That's when they should have got him. I'm not caring about him going to jail. To me, I like to see the sport punish him, not the the court system. They could put him in there for 50 years. Really, I mean, I don't like the guy, but I feel the sport. It's a sport, and the sport should police it. That's the shame of it. The San Francisco Giants was in on this and stuff like that. This guy left spring training at 185 pounds and showed up at 225 and muscle.
You he was
gain
eating Cheerios.
Pounds of fat.
That was Cheerios.
You can't gain
was...
40 pounds of muscle over the summer.
That's Cheerios.
Over the fall and winter. Comes back 40 pounds heavier, and all those warning shots become home runs. And, the Giants
don't know
anything.
He has to go from a size 6 3/4 to an 8 1/2.
Yeah. I think his average home run thing was like 17 or 21. I don't think it was more than 21 was his average home run production. And that's megalomaniac.
No, he was 20 because he was in the 20-20 club, 20 home runs, 20 stolen bases.
Mm.
So he was, and then I think he did a couple of times, he was 30 home runs and 30 stolen bases. So he would have been in the Hall of Fame anyway.
Oh, he had an excellent career. He would have been in there. But
absolutely.
His ego just ran wild. But to run wild, and, it's like I keep saying, if a kid is in my room and he cheats on a test, I don't find that extraordinary. People have cheated in school since the beginning of time. That's not extraordinary. But for a kid, this is Bonds. He cheats on the test, walks up to the front, puts his paper on your desk, and then he asks you to mark it right there on the spot. Everybody else drops their paper and leaves quietly. He's cheating, but he's going to say, can you mark my paper right now? You mark the paper. He's got 100. And then he says, could you write a letter of recommendation to Howard University or North Carolina A&T or something for me? You know what I mean? Like, you cheated. Put the paper down and walk out. Don't hit 73 home runs and draw attention to yourself.
That's right.
Don't hit these balls 500 feet. Just do, I don't know. It's just
Be inconspicuous.
Just do a little bit and go about your business. But this is
he couldn't do enough to get in the record book. But he wants to do more than that. Now, all right, so that's what you say. You say it should be police in the league. Now, why are these people complaining then, especially the governor of the state complaining that the college has been punished too much because of the Sandusky scandal?
Well, Sandusky is that's blatant criminality. I mean, that's abuse and child. I mean, that doesn't compare to Barry Bonds. I don't see that.
But he's saying that the school was punished too much. I mean, the school knew all about this.
Oh, he said too much. I thought you. Oh, okay. I missed that part about too much.
Yeah.
No,
much. He says the school has been punished too much, and they shouldn't be punished like this. I don't
they
think they're punished
sight.
Enough.
No, they lost. Anytime you are sanctioning and allowing and encouraging by doing nothing child abuse, that's I don't care if Barnes hits 5,000 home runs a season. That that doesn't put him in a category of child abuse. That's a whole different mortgage. That's criminality. That's pure criminality.
Right.
You know.
Well, as a Dodger fan, I think it was abuse. But the thing is that the governor having the nerve to say that the college sports, is that the NCAA, they have punished the school too harshly. I don't think they were punished enough.
Well, but he's the governor. I guess he's got supporters there that, you know, that want to look the other way and stuff like that.
Yeah,
Penn State's got a lot of prestigious alumni.
Yeah.
Plus, I'm sure he put a couple of these people on the board that were doing that were ignoring this problem.
Yeah, but here's the thing. He was ignoring it because he was the attorney general when it was going on.
All right, then.
So, he should be like Bonds. Put your paper on the desk and walk away. Because we'd want to drag his butt into this, too.
Yeah, see, he shouldn't even red flag that situation any more than has to.
Absolutely.
But you said that early when that first thing happened. You said that you felt that some of these people were, culpable, that they couldn't say anything because they had, you were talking about how some of them just kept quiet.
Absolutely.
Like they didn't know anything, and you smelled a rat somewhere in there.
Yeah, I said, this is the man who's the attorney general. He was the attorney general, but he was also the prosecutor in the town at the time. And then he moved up, and he was the prosecutor in town, and he was running for attorney general. He should have handled this case. He was the one. He needs to be under scrutiny and prosecuted for not going further with this case. I mean, it's a disgrace. So, he should, just like you said, he needs to put his paper down on the desk and walk out.
No, you did wrong, but be quiet. Just be quiet. Now, that's what I can't understand. That's why Barnes, that's one of the reasons he annoys me so much, is because he could have just, he was on his way to the Hall of Fame anyway. And now he's going to, he tries to diminish the work of Willie Mays and different ones by hitting these numbers that would seem to surpass them when they know those numbers don't. But, whatever. It's just,
and Willie Mays is his uncle, right? Willie Mays is his uncle?
He's not related to him by blood. He's just his godfather. And he uses that, too. I feel bad. Oh, yeah. He drags Willie Mays into things, like that gives him a pass, bringing Willie Mays to some ceremony and riding in the car with him. And that's the other thing. How do you always end this? I don't care if you're the most unpopular person in the world, in America. How do you end any speech? God bless America. You got to applaud you when you say that.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? You could be Benedict Arnold. You say, God bless America. Then you close with that. And they got to applaud you.
Absolutely. Yeah, but are they applauding you or are they applauding what you say?
Well, they're applauding. You're getting off with the applause. And I mean, you're
right.
They're not applauding you. They're applauding the statement. They can't boo you after you say God bless America. The last words out of your thing is God bless America. How do you stop a riot? They play God bless America. Stop a riot.
We were talking about God bless America. We were talking about these nut jobs, and one of the major nut jobs is this sheriff of Maricopa County in Arizona, that Sheriff Arpaio.
Oh, Arpaio?
He is such a moron. He now he's hiring posses to guard the schools. And they come to find out that a few of the people in those posses have records for endangerment of children. Now, can you actually believe that? They are on the list not to be near, was it 500 feet of a school? Now, that is just unbelievable.
Yeah, but this, I mean, Pyle just, I mean, he's got some kind of thing going there where, you know, he's in, nobody's going to get him out of there. And
yeah, well, he's a sheriff.
You know, and, I mean, he's just got, it's not, you can't even look at what he does as, you know, I mean, he's so far out that it's ridiculous.
Now but, as a teacher in good standing, former teacher in good standing, and a teacher for 100 years, who do you fear most handling the weapon? The students or some of these teachers?
I don't understand anything about having teachers armed. I mean, it doesn't make a guy walks in there and he's telling you about playing the piano, or he's talking about conjugating a verb or something. That's got no correlation that I can find with a firearm, you know. And I mean, I don't even see it. There's no correlation. There's none. I don't know what you can say. You know,
well,
you can't arm the school. You can't. I'm telling you, it's a library. And that's the other thing to me. Look, I said last week, if you blow up an airplane, then they won't have security at the airport. If you blow up a train, then they'll have security at the train station. Then there'd be the supermarket. Then it could be Joe Shoeshine Parlor. Then it could be, well, it's the movie theater we already done. You can't run around and trail. I mean, church, you know, standing on line at the post office. I don't know what you can do. You know, you can't just, well, give a postman to carry a gun now because somebody got shot at the post office. you can't just,
I mean,
you know, you can't.
Where does
it
stop?
Doesn't work.
Where does it stop? It's just like what Andrew Cuomo said the other day, which was so, just listen to this.
We are proposing today common sense measures. And I say to you, forget the extremists. It's simple. No one hunts with an assault rifle. No one needs 10 bullets to kill a deer. And too many innocent people have died already. End the madness now. Gun control in the state of New York. Make this state safer. Save lives. Set an example for the rest of the nation. Let them look at New York and say, this is what you can do, and this is what you should do. This is New York, the progressive capital. You show them how we lead.
Now, New York City is the one that passed the Sullivan Law. So they have been on top of this since 1911. But,
yeah, and
I mean...
And again...
Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying what he said is, I mean, you got a machine gun to kill a deer or kill a rabbit or whatever you want. That's ridiculous. These guns are just... I mean, you know, you got a right to bear an arm. It doesn't have to be a 25-shot automatic... 50 caliber tank mounted gun. Yeah, I mean, what the hell is this, crazy?
Well, and you missed what I said. What I had played before, Stanley McChrystal, former general, who was in charge of all of Afghanistan. He said, "Look, I'd carry M4, I carried I carried M16, AK-47 equivalent, M4 carbine." He said, "People don't need to have that in their house." He said it was meant to kill people, humans, not deer.
Kill a lot.
Little rodents. A lot. That's right. And that's the clue. Not to kill one person, a lot of people. But the question I keep trying to get an answer from is, what do you do? You're afraid of tyrannical government taking over. What do you do with your M? with your M4 carbine or your AK-47, your M16 that you have in your house with 1,000, 2,000 rounds of ammunition, and SEAL Team 6 comes after you. What do you do? Ain't nothing you could do but say, please, don't shoot me. And most of these people will say, yes, you're right. I give up. It's just like this person on the Ed Show who this Carolyn Kane that I was talking about earlier, I played the clip. She's a teacher in Utah. Says that she's one of the teachers that went to study and show how to use a handgun. Said that she's always been thinking about it and she wants to do it. And the question Ed asked her is, where are you going to put the concealed weapon with a bunch of rambunctious sixth graders running around? And she could not answer the question.
It's I'm telling you, I don't understand. You get shot with a gun, you're going to bring more guns to the place than was ever there before.
Right.
And you go around, it's all insanity just comes out. Like you're saying, this thing, it brings out the insanity in people. But listen, I was, when I lived in Charlotte, I was having my house inspected. I may have mentioned this once. I had my house inspected because I had a new air conditioning unit, and it's got to be okay because of the power that the air conditioning unit draws or something. They sent out an inspector. So as he's walking around looking at things and around the circle of the property and trying to see what's going on, and then we're going to go under the house. And so we're talking, and something had happened in the paper, and I said, I mentioned it or he mentioned it, and I, you know, and then we said, well, you know, you have to be able to protect your family. And I said, yeah. I said, there's a lot of criminals and crazy people running around, and I mentioned Timothy McVeigh. This was right around the time of McVeigh.
Mm-hmm.
And now Timothy McVeigh, if people don't remember exactly, blew up 168 people in Oklahoma City, including, I think it was 48 or 60 48 kids, I think,
right,
died when he blew up the federal courthouse building. The guy that I was talking to about protecting your family and talking about having a gun to protect your family, he turned to me and said, well, you know, McVeigh's not really a criminal because that's the only thing he ever did against the law. The only thing he ever did was kill 168 innocent people. So his record is clean. That was the guy's I got him off the property as quick as I could. And you're talking to somebody who said you kill 168 people, including 41 more children than got killed in Connecticut. 41 children got blown to death in the daycare center that was in the federal courthouse. And he knew it was there. He didn't care. And the guy says, I mean, how crazy can you be? These are people that want these guns. The guy said, that's the only crime he committed. Isn't that enough? Isn't that enough? Yeah, we're supposed to kill 190 people? Would have been worse.
Unbelievable. Oh, yeah, and by the way,
he
didn't do it with an AK-47 either.
I'm telling you, dude, with 3,500 pounds of fertilizer.
Yeah, right. And you know, this with this clown, this Alex, I don't know if you saw the clip from Piers Morgan with Alex Jones on it. I played the first part of it today. And this guy is, I mean, he went so ballistic on Alex Jones. I'm going to play the second portion of it right now. It's about 5 minutes long. But you just need to hear this man is completely – and he represents the NRA and this minority that's trying to convince the majority that we are in a fascist state. Just listen to
this. Here's how this is going to work, and it's entirely down to you. I'm going to ask you some questions. In the spirit of a proper debate, and you've had a lot to say so far on the show, a lot of it aimed at me, it's just fine.
But I want you to try and answer the questions. It's a proper debate, okay? I'm not trying to trip you up.
No, it's not a debate. You're running the show. You bring in your victims up front.
Actually, no.
Look, you got your little note card.
Okay.
I just gave you FBI statistics that violent crime and gun crime is down over 20%.
Let me just answer
And you want to go to little factoids.
No, they're not little
factoids.
Anybody
can pull those up. Listen.
Do you know what...
Do you have a bodyguard?
Alex.
Why do you have bodyguards?
I don't have a bodyguard.
Yeah, I've seen you on the news with them.
Don't
you want to protect your wife from hoodlums or you want to call the police?
Let me ask you this question.
Why does Dianne Feinstein until 60
Alex.
Minutes that she planned to try to take Mr. and Mrs. America's guns.
Stop talking over me.
You guys want to disarm all of America.
No, I don't.
Dianne Feinstein's bill does.
I don't.
Gun confiscation.
No, let me clarify for you. You don't seem to understand
First
what
you register, then you confiscate. No. Always done the same.
Here's what the campaign on this
Well, here, give me your little cue cards and I'll answer your questions
what
for you.
What was the weapon used at Sandy Hook?
I've already gone over that and already answered it for
we
you.
We haven't talked about Sandy Hook.
No, again.
What was the weapon?
It's a 223 M4.
Right.
Again, but statistically, they're using very low percentage of shooting.
But
period.
Are you seeing
people wouldn't go swimming because the movie Jaws,
the biggest,
even though great white sharks kill five people a year.
Alex,
you're trying to scare people.
Let me say something.
There's no metal shark in the water.
The same type of weapon was used in the last three mass shootings.
And Hitler used semi-autos to kill people.
Why would you
not? So did Mao.
Why would you?
Why is the government arming to the teeth against us?
Alex, I don't.
What about Fast and Furious?
Alex,
why do our government ship guns into Mexico?
Alex,
to blame the Second Amendment?
Let's have a debate.
A false flag?
Alex.
To blame the Second Amendment?
I get accused.
Why they blow up Building 7 down the street here in New York?
I get accused when I get you guys on of talking over you, of being rude. I'm trying to be civil.
Yeah.
Right? You've got to try and answer some of the questions, right? Here's my issue for you. Why do people need, civilians, need an AR-15 type assault rifle? Why
I already said statistically they're used in a very low amount of the crimes. That's an FBI fact.
They've been used in the last three mass shootings.
Yes.
Why?
I'll tell you why. Because they advertise it in the media. Anybody knows that if somebody jumps off the Empire State Building, they put cops up there the next day because copycats come to do it again. The media hypes and hypes and hypes.
And that's all the
don't just commit suicide.
Why do people
don't commit suicide by killing a bunch of kids. And here's the gun to use because it's the one the U.S. Army uses.
Why do people need them?
They need them to protect us from the number one killer in history. Government in the 20th century, university study out of Hawaii killed 292 million people. It's called democide. Google it, folks.
Do you believe everyone in America? Should everyone in America, therefore, have an AR-15 if they want one?
Statistically, where there's more guns, there's lower crime. The highest crime is in Bloomberg, you know.
But you have the most guns in any of the 23 richest countries in the world. And you have
11,000 America was born on guns and whiskey.
Right.
But it's true we're a violent society.
Right. So you said that America has the most
knives
guns.
Knives kill three times more. Have you seen the FBI numbers? Knives, bats, rocks.
Assault guns.
Kill many times more.
Alex, let's talk
it's
about the guns.
It's not the rock. It's not the knife. When a mother chops her kids up with a cleaver because she's on serotonin.
Tell me why I'm wrong.
Why don't you
want to
get rid of the drugs? Does there half your sponsors?
Stick to the subject.
America's number one cause of unnatural death now is suicide. Not automobile accident, not cancer, not...
You accuse me of attacking the Second Amendment of the Constitution.
I want to get people off pills that the insert says will make you commit suicide and kill people.
Alex, let's get about the Second Amendment.
I want to blame the real culprit.
Alex.
Suicide pills.
Alex.
Mass murder pills.
Okay, let me ask you one question. Your belief, unless I'm wrong...
First time anybody's ever heard this, by the way.
Your belief, unless I'm wrong, is that under the Second Amendment... Your real concern is that you will be overrun by a tyrannical regime, either from somewhere else.
Yeah, highway checkpoints. Look at Mexico. Total gun ban for the citizens. Highest crime rate in the world. 57,000 people dead the last 5 years. Total gun ban for the citizens.
But you'll make...
Switzerland has the lowest crime rate in Europe.
Alex,
your country
has
the highest.
Alex, we have 35 gun murders a year.
You
have 11,000.
You people get their brains... It's the higher crime rate.
Let me ask
violent crime is higher.
On this specific...
It's brains. It's people.
I'm trying to get inside your brain.
Pierce,
it's
if
not
you punch me right
big.
Now, it'd be not your fist,
Alex,
but your brain that
Alex, let me get inside your brain.
Okay.
Okay? I'm serious. You have a very, very big platform. You air, I think, on 63 networks.
No. That Wikipedia is like 10 years old. I'm on over 140 stations. XM.
Millions of Americans hear you.
Over a million
every
app
day.
Visitors, InfoWars.com.
And I congratulate
you on the
your
statistics posted right now.
Okay.
InfoWars.com.
Who do you believe was behind 9/11?
Oh, I absolutely know. I have the police on CNN saying, get back, they're going to blow up 7. I have BBC reporting.
Who do you believe was behind
I have the proof. I heard them on CBS radio.
Oh, Alex.
They announced they blew up the towers on CBS radio.
Who do you believe?
New Yorkers all saw it and heard it.
Alex, who do you
believe?
They
blew up Building 7.
Alex, who do you believe was behind it? The American government?
criminal elements of the military-industrial complex, the same ones that staged Gulf of Tonkin, the same ones that staged Operation,
right.
the mass shootings of Operation
right.
Gladio.
Right.
Ooh, the CIA don't
mean,
like this
Alex,
right now.
Alex, do you mean that President Bush and his administration were behind 9/11?
I mean that even mainstream news reported that the hijackers were ordered to be allowed into the United States. Michael Springman, the head of the Visa Department, blew the whistle
right.
on that.
So the Bush administration was part of a conspiracy.
Well, he said never let us tolerate
to murder.
I can speak in the facts of this letter.
Yeah.
The
but is that
government
what you believe?
Hitler firebombed his own Reichstag, yes, to bring in martial law in Germany, yeah. April 27th, 1933. Governments have staged terror attacks throughout history or allowed terrorists to attack mm-hmm. as a pretext to invade and enslave the populations. I probably own more than 50 firearms. Many of them have increased in value 2, 3, or even 4 times. I sleep very comfortably outside Austin,
okay.
Texas, knowing
Alex.
That I can defend my family.
Okay. Alex Jones is
InfoWars.com.
This is the man who wants to deport me from the country for wanting to get rid of
assault
rifles.
It's to point out you're a foreigner, a redcoat, here telling us what to do.
Whatever.
Go back where they took the guns if you don't like it. The communists...
Now, how this is going to work, and it's entirely down to you. I'm going to ask you some questions.
This is
in the spirit of a proper debate, and you've had a lot to say so far on the show, a lot of it aimed at me. It's just fine.
All right. Now, I mean, is that incredible? What? This is a guy.
He's no more incredible than Rush Limbaugh and Karl Rove. And I mean, it's the same insanity that he's just louder than they are, but he's still talking just as much craziness as they do. You got a gun problem, go out and buy more guns. So that's crazy.
Well,
I don't know.
The thing is that we have this mentality out there that feeds people who have paranoia. There was a movie. What was that movie that was called about feeding the paranoia? They feed the paranoia because this is all they have. They don't have anything else. And that's a major problem that we have today. We have some of these people that just, you know, they're just wacko.
Yeah, but then the thing is that these people, you can't isolate anybody more because they can tweet and they can text and they can do all this other stuff. And like we said, they walk around with a television in your back pocket. So, you know, I mean, these are people who never would have been heard. But now, you know, they can be heard. Because, I mean, it's just crazy. Rush Limbaugh and different ones. When you get on the television and say, I hope the president of the United States, radio, I hope the president of the United States fails. That's unpatriotic, and
right.
I don't know how you can say that and just keep on going. But I guess you're supported by a bunch of people who are nuts. How can you make a statement like that? I never want the president of the United States to fail. I don't care if he's a Democrat or Republican. I don't care if he's
absolutely
gay, straight, whatever. I want him to do well because if he does well, then that's good for me and my family. It's good if he does well. Why would you want him to fail? And what could it be except? I mean, what's extraordinary about this president that people make these statements that they never made about others? So it's something
absolutely
wrong with that.
Correct. Well, you're absolutely correct. I mean, but it just seems that I have never seen a mentality where, you know, it's just like what was the car that had the problems when you hit it in the rear with the left light on.
The Corvair, not the Corvette, the Corvair.
Right, Corvair, right. And then they made a movie that was with Gene Hackman, which I used to teach that movie in school. It's so great. Where he was the lawyer, and he had his daughter, who was.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
I can't think of the movie offhand, but it was about that they knew that they had this problem, but the thing was that it cost
the
them
counted.
Less money. Right. It cost
the
them less money.
It was cheap. Right.
Right. It was cheaper to let the people die than to have to retrofit all the cars.
Right.
And they counted that, insurance. Right.
They figured out like 800 and something or 1,200 people will die of those people.
Right.
That will sue beyond dying and will sue for extra money would only be like half of the 800
right.
with the people would pursue it because some people would be single and unattached and things like that. And the bean counter,
right.
they worked it all out, and they said, you're exactly right, you know, they said it would be like 100 and something million to fix the cars, and
right.
all the lawsuits would only come to like 50 million or something. But this
right.
was numbers from 30 years ago. You know,
right.
and it was cheaper. I mean, that was scary. When they did that, they said it was cheaper to let the people die than to fix the car. That
right.
was scary.
I, you know, and this is a problem here. It would cost them a lot of money if they couldn't sell to the general public. But it's just like the cigarettes. They know the cigarettes are killing people. They know that. But yet they still sold them because and the people who were selling them didn't smoke. That's the other thing. They knew better. They didn't
but
smoke.
But you remember, now here's something scary. Remember when we grew up, what was scary? A baseball game. Today the Dodgers, the Yankees, the Giants, I don't care what baseball team it was, is doing what? Donating 200 cartons of cigarettes to the Veterans Hospital.
Yes.
That was a great thing. Everybody, the baseball team is so nice. They're going to send, I mean, there wasn't any conspiracy or something, but I mean, it's just,
right.
it was a terrible, I mean, we didn't realize they're sending 200, and everybody used to say, oh, that's so nice that their team would take some veterans and send 200 cartons of cigarettes to the
right.
Veterans Hospital. Or they do it on a Sunday. I think they do this Sunday at Sunday games. They'd announce that they'd send 200 cartons of cigarettes to the base to the Veterans Hospital.
Is that incredible?
Know.
Is that incredible? And they knew back then it was only killing people. They knew back then, and so we have the. And I didn't get a chance to, when I talked to Dr. Metzger, I was talking to him about this before off the air. And I said, you know, why hasn't this dye pulse machine, and I want to tell you, it really works. Why hasn't this dye pulse machine, why isn't it out there everywhere? He said, well, he was telling me a story about where he had a, he was working with one hospital. And it was a trial area, and after a few weeks or a month or so, they told him, well, don't bother coming back. And why? He said, well, you know, the patients ain't coming back because the thing works. You're going to put us out of business. So the thing is that the medical profession today is not to prevent you from getting sick. The insurance companies have fought against that for years. But now they have to. Now they have to do preventive care. And if they don't do preventive care, they have to spend at least 80% of all your premiums on your care. And if they don't, you have to get back the portion of that 80% that they didn't use. So the thing is, that they say, oh, I wonder if that would stop the insurance companies from insuring. No, because now they have twice as many people that are covered. So the insurance companies never, ever, ever lose. So the whole idea is that I was speaking to my doctor about this before. There's no way in the world they haven't discovered a cure for cancer. But is it cost effective? Is it cost effective for them to have a cure for cancer? We don't know. And that's the problem. We don't know. Well, I guess we do know. And the answer is no. It's not cost-effective for them to have a cure for cancer.
Well, all I think about, you know, like, there's built-in corruption in a lot of this stuff. Because, I mean, look, I remember when people would come to me when I was still in Brooklyn and stuff, and they would tell me, they'd say, oh, we just bought a house. Some people just got married. we just bought a house. I said, yeah. I said, you can afford a house? They said, oh, yeah, it's just $200 a month the first year. And the second year, it's just $250 a month. And I'm like, well, what kind of house is this? And then they said, I said, well, what happens the third year? Oh, then it's $1,900 a month. Now, are you $200, $250, $1,900 a month? Well, how do you make that jump? Oh, you know, the guy told me at the bank, he said 3 years from now, I'll probably be the supervisor. I'll probably be the vice president of the company. What's
right.
the company? Joe's Popcorn Stand. So you're gonna be able to afford $1,900 a month because you're gonna rise up from the peanut guy to the popcorn guy and make $1,900 a month selling popcorn at Joe's. I mean, it's just who could tell people that they should go $1,900 a month? There were people on TV that had their own show couldn't pay $1,900 a month. And here's a guy working in Brooklyn at a candy store or something and thinking he's going to be – the bank is encouraging him that he's going to make $1,900 a month for mortgage. This ain't this total – this just was crazy. I said, that can't possibly be. I thought the person was, delusional about something. How do you go from $250 to $1,900 a month, and think that's realistic? And then they say, "Oh, they're foreclosed." Well, you ain't gonna be foreclosed. And it, you know, you're right. I mean, it's just like when they used to with the cars. I mean, they're not used to that. I guess they still do. Look at planned obsolescence. That Vance Packard thing about planned obsolescence. They're selling you something that they know is already out of date. Look at I was told yesterday that. The disc, we went there, we had videotape, we had regular tape, and then videotape, and then we had the disc and stuff like that. I heard the disc on the way out because of the cloud. There's no reason to have a disc anymore.
You're right. There is no reason.
Because you can go straight to the cloud. If you have the cloud, you have unlimited storage. So nothing has to be saved on a disc. You just get something that pulls it out of the cloud, and you can. There's no reason to have a disc of anything physical to store something. It's up there in the cloud, and all you have to do is just get a machine that pulls it out of the cloud.
So my,
that's the next thing.
My 17 or 1800 VSH movies on this wall over here are worthless, huh?
It'll be someday. It'll be like a fossil. It'll be like a collector's item because you know you still. You're the only one that's still having it or something.
Well,
but, I mean, that's the way it works.
I still have VHS tapes. I have VHS, 8-track tapes. I got an 8-track tape.
I got my wax records out. I got my wax records, you know. But I can't sit there and throw. I'm not throwing out the Modern Jazz Quartet and Nina Simone and different ones like that. I don't care what they're on. But it's still, I mean, they know when they're selling you the thing. I remember a kid in the store. I came in and I asked about something. And he said, oh, it's right over there. He says, and then he said, but I tell you, wait 3 months, there's something else coming out. He told me something, I forgot what it was. But it was like the changeover from VHS to disc. And he warned me, he said, don't buy it. He said, 3 months from now, this is like at Best Buy. He said, come back in 3 months. He said, they'll have the new thing out. You know, and I mean, it wasn't like it was some top military secret. I mean, this is just a kid that works in the store, but he knew more about it than I did. And he told me, he said, if you buy that, he said it'll be a dead number in 3 months. He said this changeover will come, you know.
Well, yeah, they did that with Blu-ray. And I said, I am not going to Blu-ray now. I have my HD TV. I got my HD incoming stream from AT&T. I have a sound system now. I am not going to Blu-ray when they're twice as expensive as the regular disc. Please. And I'm the only one that's see the difference because my wife's not going to see the difference. Nobody else is. But, you know, hey, it'd be nice. But that's not going to do it. That's ludicrous. But
yeah.
Before I get that, I want to know, what about the movies? The Academy Awards. We're going to have an Academy Awards show here the week before the Academy. I need you to be there. Lori's going to be on the show. But she's got me all hopped up now about this Beast of the Southern Wild. She says it's the best movie of the year. So So yeah, I downloaded it off Amazon, and I'm going to watch it this weekend.
Yeah. These are the thing. It's you know, you gotta buy into the thing. It's kind of, it's a good picture, but you gotta. It's not gonna. I can't see it being popular with a large, you know, the large market. Mm-hmm. You know, it's an artsy picture. It's very creative and stuff like that, but it's not the kind of thing that it's going to draw a mega. It can't win anything on votes. I mean, because it's not. First of all, it's not being seen by enough people. And
but it was
also
nominated for Best Picture.
Huh? Yeah, it's nominated, but I'm saying it can't win. It's not being, wider distribution.
This is what I told Lori. I said, look, Lori, I said, yeah, okay, nominated Best Picture. But I made the comparison with the baseball players. I said, and the basketball players. They are diluting the Best Picture and actors and everybody else in these categories when they nominate 12 and 10 and 8 and 9 people. That's ludicrous. Hey, if they wanted, they always did 5 or 4. Hey, make it 5 or 6 now. But
yeah,
don't
I think
make
it was always 5 until last year or something. I think last year was the first year when it wasn't 5.
It was 10. Wasn't 10 or 12 or something?
It's 10.
I think it's 10. Hey, that's completely ludicrous. Everyone
knows. You know, it's an opportunity to advertise the pitches. See, they're not sitting there trying to figure out what's the best pitch. They're trying to advertise these pitches because they get another go around. Once you're nominated, when you win or lose, you get another go around because you've created interest in the pitcher.
Yeah.
Now, you never in your life said Beast of the Southern Pines or whatever, Southern Winds.
Southern
whatever.
Yeah.
You've never said that in your life, but
I never heard of it. Well,
and you stimulated some interest in it,
told
stuff
me,
like that.
I didn't even know that. Yeah.
And after the awards, when they show the trailer for it on the awards, it'll stimulate interest and it'll go around and make a whole new cycle and make more money than it did the first time around. That's the way it works. I mean, this is, you know, it's like the basketball All-Star game. The basketball All-Star game is not there to show you who the best players are. It's to make money. And the pro football, look at the pro football thing. They can't get these guys to hit each other in a Pro Bowl because they're just there to advertise to keep the football on another week on television. So
right.
The TV show is not a thing. They're not going to go out there and break a guy's leg or kill each other, you know, because it's,
okay,
it's
so
just
tell
a,
us, what's the best movie of the year?
To me, it's between Argo and Lincoln. Argo and Lincoln is tremendous, but Lincoln, I would have to go with Lincoln. Lincoln is just across the board, but Argo is very good too. But those are, to me, I can't see any two pitches being better than those two.
Well, what about Zero Dark Thirty?
Which one?
Zero Dark Thirty.
Saw that today. It's too much.
Huh?
It's too much.
Too much.
They go into every detail. You don't need to know every detail. It just wore me out. You know, it's not that it's not a good picture, but it's trying to be more like a documentary, but it's got too much. You know, I don't need to see you load the gun and oil the gun and do everything. Is too much. And you know, it's too much.
They had the one on everything,
but it's just too much. I don't need that much detail.
What's the one that was on TV about SEAL Team 6 that went to get Osama bin Laden? That was on about 2 months ago, and I'm trying to think who the producer of that was. It might have been who's JFK's producer? The producer for JFK. Who was that?
JFK was, what's his name? Clint Eastwood did that.
No, that was
Clint Eastwood did JFK.
No, not JFK.
I'm sorry. I'm thinking of J. Edgar Hoover.
Yeah, right. JFK was what's his name? The ones that the right hates. I forgot his name. But anyway, that I thought was very well done. That was on the what network was that? Biography? Wasn't Biography? A&E? One of those networks. It was about an hour and a half long. That was fabulous.
This is two and a half hours, and it's just, I don't know, we don't need to see, I don't know, this is something about it, this is too much. It's
how
too
do you
much,
nominate,
but
the other question is, before we go, we've got another 2 minutes here, How do you nominate a movie for Best Picture and not nominate the director for Best Director? How does that happen?
Well, the you know, I mean, what happens, I think, is a lot of times, see, a lot of things in Hollywood, they owe people. Just like I try to say this, you give a great performance and you're a new guy, and somebody else that never got an award gives a fair performance, but they look at his body of work, they're going to give it to the older guy because he is on the way out and he's done, had a good career. He just, you know, you don't give it to some 19-year-old kid because he was wonderful playing a 19-year-old kid who's a drug addict. You know what I'm saying? So even though he gave a wonderful performance, you're not going to give it to him. Some director, they look up and realize that, man, this guy made a lot of wonderful movies. He lost to Gone with the Wind, and he lost to, you know, The Greatest Show on Earth and stuff. So they, you know, they're going to skip somebody who's going to get burned. So they, but it's not unfair. It's not unfair. Just like you talk about Mike Piazza. And Mike Piazza could be deserving and stuff like that. Or somebody else could be deserving. Some younger guy could be deserving. He had a great season. It's like they did with the thing, Triple Crown. What's the name of the Triple Crown winner? But that didn't necessarily make him the most valuable player.
Right.
Because they, you know, a lot of times it's like this guy put in his time. And if he's an old-time guy and he never really got this or that, you're going to give it to him. If it's Peyton Manning, or you're going to give it to Peyton Manning RG3, you give it to Peyton Manning because he's on the way out. It's your last chance to do something for him.
Right.
That's the way it works. So, I mean, there's things that happen.
Our listing is going to be what you're saying is Lincoln. I saw Lincoln. That's the only one I've seen so far. And I'm going to watch the others in the next 2 weeks. I think the Golden Globes are coming up very shortly. They're in the next two weeks,
right?
Yeah, they come up first.
Okay.
All right, we're going to talk about this, but Ben Affleck, he didn't get nominated, but his film got nominated.
He did a wonderful job as a director, and you know, he was all right as the actor, but his job as a director he did a wonderful job. That picture is really good, Argo. I mean, you're sitting there, you know how it turns out, and you're still rooting and nervous about them making it, and you know they made it.
Well,
you can say the same thing about Lincoln.
You know how it's going to turn out.
But still, right, you're hoping that Booth will suddenly miss it, you know.
Okay.
But,
all right. All right.
Good.
Gaff, give us where we can
all
get a hold of you at Gaff at where? What's the website?
It's just www.biggaff2.blogspot.com.
Okay, we will see you, and we're going to be talking about this more. Everybody have a great weekend. This has been The Last Word.
Think you've flown before, but you ain't left the ground. Wait till you're locked in my embrace. Wait till I draw you near. Wait till you see that sunshine place. Ain't nothing like it here. The best is yet to come, and babe, won't it be fine? The best is yet to come. Come the day you're mine. Oh, of a tree of life, I just picked me a plum.